This is CES Tech Talk. I'm James Kotecki, bringing you a media roundtable conversation on digital health, captured live at CES 2025. We brought together some of the brightest media minds for this conversation, and we're bringing it to you right now.
All right. Hello, everybody. For those of you who were here 5 minutes ago, I'm back with another panel session. Thank you all for joining us for the Digital Health Media Panel. I have with me three lovely journalists who have come to cover the show in the digital health vertical specifically. If we could just go down the line, introduce ourselves, tell us how many years you've been covering CES and a little bit about your topics of coverage.
Hey, everyone. My name is Cassie McGrath. I'm a reporter with Healthcare Brew. We're a professional division under Morning Brew, and I always like to say you might know us from our workplace TikToks, but I cover everything from hospitals to health plans to tech. This is my first year at CES, but I've been covering healthcare for a few years. I'm really excited to be here. Thanks, everyone.
Hey, I'm Logan Plaster. I'm the head of content at Startup Health. It's also my first year at CES. I write about, guess, healthcare startups, and kind of tracking the big moonshot trends. Can we kind of go for the big goals and see who's kind of shooting for the moon in health tech, particularly down in the startup zone? And I've been covering healthcare for about 19 years, but again, first time at CES.
Hi, I'm James Stables. I'm the founder of Wearable.com. We've been doing, well, it's my 10th CES, I think, or maybe not, maybe I've missed a pandemic one, but we cover the wearables industry. We've been doing that for 10 years and recently sort of come out of direct consumer stuff and talking about consumer digital health as wearables have become more complex and ecosystems are growing. And we do a very cool newsletter everyone should sign up for called Pulse by Wearable, which is a Substack on digital health and wearables.
Okay, well, welcome and welcome back. So this year, digital health has been one of our key themes at the show. You guys know that, you know in particular, James, that health has moved from North Hall to the Venetian. We have a digital health summit. It's really blown up. AARP is here with their Age Tech Collaborative. And we're just seeing these health and accessibility innovations just bigger and better than ever. So I want to know, what are the most promising trends that you've seen in digital health so far at the show?
Yeah, I can get started on that one. I've noticed a specific trend towards sleep at the show this year, and I personally think that that's going to be one of the up-and-coming trends in healthcare. Definitely, as you mentioned, the aging population is growing exponentially, as well as meeting shortages and staff and providers and otherwise. So a lot of innovations for staffing, for meeting the aging population. I saw a smart diaper that can report when patients need a change to help cut down on the times. Things like that that I think are really exciting and can potentially really make a difference in patient care for the people who need it most.
We are at an incredibly exciting moment in neurotech, and we saw that on the floor. This is partially, I'm looking for it because we launched this Alzheimer's Moonshot and have been writing a lot about neurotech, but there is so much happening in terms of understanding brain signals, using AI to interpret brain signals in new ways, using infrared light to treat neurodegenerative diseases, infrared light, radio signals, electrical stimulation. We're in like literally a 1 to 2 year flywheel moment with neurotech, and you could see it down in Eureka Park and on the main floor.
Yeah, I went to a really cool digital health track on neurotech. It was really cool. On the consumer side, you know, these sort of dumb wearables we've had for like 10 years are actually getting really good now. So people are getting in tune with their data and health in a meaningful way. Obviously, AI is helping that, and it's sort of helping to make sense of data. Companies like Aura are doing really great stuff with slicing and dicing data and making it meaningful at long last. We've been talking about that for like 10 years, and now it's actually happening. Some really cool like bio wearables, bio sensors, so which I'll probably end up banging on about in a minute, like Dexcom and Aura teaming up. There's Abbott by Lingo by Abbott, and some pretty cool sensors for like tracking signs of perimenopause, and a very cool hormone meter. Have you seen that?
Hormometer.
Yeah, yeah. I asked them if it was hormometer, but they went hormometer, which I didn't think tracked that well. But anyway,
understood.
Yeah. So yeah, good stuff everywhere.
If I can just add on the wearables biosensors component, at a panel earlier, an executive from Eli Lilly was talking about how patients often report the side effects they experience with medications, and that wearables in the future may be used to detect that on behalf of patients and can report that data back. And personally, I'll be really interested to see how wearables will roll into clinical trials as well as things like primary care and stuff like that.
Yeah, I was mentioning earlier anecdotally that last year at Eureka Park in the Dutch Pavilion, there was an exhibitor who had an AI model that would essentially go through patient records and then would be able to essentially assess based on their medical history their risk of infection after surgery, and that could then inform the patient care and how they monitor that patient post-surgery. So interested to see how that develops, if you guys have any thoughts on that.
Well, that plays into just everything like that. Seems like it has 6 or 7 tendrils that lead back into it. So I know a company working on computer vision looking at the same cut. And so you've got the folks looking at the data to understand, okay, who's going to have a readmission. You have the computer vision guys, and you have this company over here. And so that leads me to issues of collaboration. You see all these folks doing pretty similar things in Eureka Park. And so the big question is, how can we get them together, get them talking, get them sharing information?
Yeah, no, definitely. I think we're in discovery phases always of how to deploy this technology. And so probably the next phase that they have to look into, as you said, is streamlining the data and the application of the data.
Yeah, and on the note of predicting the outcomes of surgeries, I think everyone at all times is talking about preventative care and healthcare. And so any technologies that can accurately predict if patients will develop a certain condition or maybe catch something sooner, right now I've seen so many cool technologies just tracking glucose levels and helping patients with diabetes and things like that, because we know that cardiometabolic diseases are a huge burden on people and healthcare system, but more importantly, people. So I think anything that can really help keep people out of the hospital in the first place and the technologies that are making a difference there, I think are really exciting.
And I want to follow that up with, we were discussing a little bit earlier about there is a bit of a healthcare worker shortage, and the supply is not necessarily increasing at the rate that the demand requires. So how do we think technologies that you may be seeing at the show will be able in the future to help meet that demand or close that gap a little bit?
A big issue there is dealing with the mountains of data that are being thrown at providers. And so health systems need to take it really seriously. There's not a silver bullet for fixing that problem. They need to put the providers, mental health as a top priority and figure out how to invest in, alert fatigue, computer fatigue, and just prioritize that part of the patient encounter.
Yeah, I have a monthly newsletter that I write called AI 411, little plug. And every month, the biggest the highest rate of announcements I always see are AI scribes that take notes on behalf of clinicians. Some of you may be using them, but I think it's kind of right now an intersection between implementation of these new technologies and adoption, if clinicians are using these yet, if they're finding them helpful, where they could possibly improve. But I think that could potentially help in shortages, because we all know how documentation burnout is a real problem, and could give, right now, there's promise that could give a lot more time back to face-to-face interactions with patients.
Yeah, I think if it's coming back to what you said earlier, Cassie, if anything links, you know, you guys are more in the sort of pure healthcare field, obviously in the consumer tech field, if it's something that unifies everything, you see at CS, it's, you've got to keep people out of hospital. You've got to, as you say, there's care and problems, there's physician problems, there's staffing problems, there's budgetary problems in the UK, like our health services. Constantly a topic of news about being stretched to breaking point every winter. We've got to keep people away, you know, out of chronic disease, and bio-wearables like Lingo and Stello, the Dexcom one, like glucose spiking, glucose levels hugely linked to chronic disease. If we can help people stay healthier and stay on top of that in their 50s and 60s, they're not going to be in hospitals with chronic disease in the 70s, 80s. And then if people do make it into hospitals, you know, using wearables to make sure they can be cared for at home, remote patient monitoring, you know, putting them in touch with their doctors and you know, the hormometer, like people doing IVF, coming into clinics like every day to get their levels tested so they can have a successful run at their, you know, it's not just for their IVF. You know, that's a burden on them and their jobs for, you know, doing an IVF cycle. It's a lot of money as well, but it's also those waiting times will be massive because people are just constantly going in to get tested. The hormometer is a saliva solution, so you just sort of pop it, the sensor in the mouth, and it can tell you what the levels are. So you can just do all that at home and show up at the clinic on the right day. All of these things like come together to be like less burden on the health service. How can we create better healthcare experiences and better outcomes and a better future?
I love that. That's an amazing story.
Just one more to add to. Some of you may have seen One Medical on the exhibition floor at the Venetian, and they're advertising like a clinic in a box that's been implemented in the Texas prison system and in homeless shelters and rural areas where patients often don't have access to care and, of course, need it and deserve it. And I'll be interested to see how technologies like this can provide more access to primary care amid shortages and otherwise.
That was fascinating to me because there have been multiple other clinic-in-a-box technologies attempted, and they didn't work. So I had a chance to talk to those folks as well. And sometimes it's little tweaks within the technology that that makes it different. They made the physician full-size, and you could have eye contact with your physician. And so interesting to me how each generation they sort of figure out these elements, like what was holding us back from really connecting with our doctor over telemedicine. Maybe it's this element of like seeing them sort of in the flesh.
And that's a little bit of the scientific method at work, which is what we love to see at CES, you know, trial, error, and then improvements. So we have discussed already in terms of vital monitoring, et cetera, a lot of preventative care solutions. Now, I wanted to turn a little bit to accessibility with chronic conditions. A lot of the technology we've seen at the show floor, whether Eureka Park or in the Age Tech Pavilion, is able to help those with audiovisual disabilities or the aging population just live more comfortable lives. I saw actually at Eureka Park this morning, really cool exhibitor called Lumen that was a bit of, I guess, like we said, the evolution of a wearable in the Swiss Pavilion last year, wherein they had haptic feedback glasses that would just give you haptic feedback on obstacles in your path. So in front, to the left, or the right of you. This one is, I guess, the next phase of that, an evolution of that technology wherein the wearable is, again, on the head, except it integrates with Google Maps, so it gives you haptic lead feedback, so it is directional, and I thought that was a really, really cool development for the visually impaired. Yeah,
I was loving Essilor right at the entrance. Everyone saw Essilor, beautiful glasses that were for hearing augmentation, and as you turn your head, it mutes sounds from the sides and the back, and it focuses your hearing in front of you. But what really I found interesting in terms of accessibility was the idea of pushing back against the stigma of hearing aids by making the glasses beautiful. And I think that was an interesting trend I saw, was a few places really thinking about the aesthetics of a health tech device and saying, this is part of what you do. If someone doesn't really want to incorporate it into their daily life, they're not going to use it.
Yeah, I think what's interesting about that, and it plays into not something from the show, but Apple's big breakthroughs this year with AirPods is like, it's not really about people with massive amounts of hearing loss that would go to their doctor and then go to an audiologist and get a proper in-ear hearing aid. Those people would still probably use that. It's like the millions and millions and millions of other people who just kind of like suffer a less good life because then hearing isn't very good, and and not being able to hear properly is linked to really, really poor outcomes in terms of like dementia and like social isolation. So it's not really about these, you know, as we talk about a lot about digital health products and healthcare, it's about the people who really, really need that. It's about there's millions of people who have sort of lesser but no less important needs.
Following up on both of those really quick, I love that you brought up both of those examples, because for those of you who don't know, the producer of CES, we're the Consumer Technology Association. In our association work, we do a lot of advocacy work, and we also develop standards. So preventative care in the hearing space, we developed a hearing number standard to be able to measure your hearing health. In the past year, that was published. And John Luna of Essilor Luxottica was also in our digital health working group that did a lot of the advocacy to get FDA approval for over-the-counter hearing aids. So that was also something we're really proud of having gotten done in the past couple years, wherein, again, previously those with hearing loss who needed hearing aids would have to go into the doctor, get a prescription, and the devices that were approved for that type of care were going for several thousand dollars, and getting that FDA approval for over-the-counter hearing aids was able to get people that quality at a price point of a couple hundred.
If you want an interesting little nugget of information, Apple hasn't launched their hearing aid feature in the UK because there's no provision for over-the-counter hearing aids on sort of a governmental like level. So, you know, that just shows that there's a lot of work globally to you know, get those features out.
Yeah, I think in addition to what I was saying about sleep, I was sort of walking around the conference taking a tally of trends, and hearing and vision aids were definitely something I was seeing. I got to try the glasses on earlier today. But in addition to hearing and vision, also physical mobility supports. One company that came to mind is Cosmo Robotics, and I walked by and they have exoskeletons helping children with cerebral palsy and other conditions, as well as adults. And I'm really excited in particular about the technology's ability to help people move and walk. So I think anything that can really, these technologies really are opening doors that, you know, previously there wasn't really an option for patients. So I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Oh, and the price point for the exoskeletons has gone down. I saw one that was around $300. They were trying to be the most consumer-friendly exoskeleton.
I'm glad you mentioned that, too, because in healthcare, what we always talk about is the affordability component, and so that can't be forgotten. When we create new things, we also need to make sure they're accessible, of course.
Yeah. And especially with accessibility being accessible in terms of not being cost prohibitive, that's something that we love to see at the show, because the more these technologies develop, the more they become easier to replicate and then produce at scale. Thank you, guys. So I also will do one final plug that EssilorLuxottica, for those who don't know, I just did want to say on the point of them dealing with aesthetics and kind of helping to kind of circumvent the stigma of wearables, et cetera, by being kind of a stylish glasses wearable. EssilorLuxottica is the owner of Ray-Ban. So they're gonna look nice for those who don't know. But yeah, I love that company. Actually, they were here at the show last year, and they were one of my power sessions at Mandalay Bay during media days. So they had that was the conference that they used to launch their show. And beyond that, I think age tech also. We've talked about, you know, hearing disabilities, mobility disabilities, visual disabilities, but the aging population then having kind of like chronic care needs. I think the Age Tech Collaborative has a lot to show us, and I know Logan mentioned that he's been there, so if you can give us the highlights.
Yeah, we have a number of companies in Startup Health. We work with about 500 companies from 30 countries, and so a few of them were in the Age Tech Collaborative. One deals with using your camera's smartphone to take to get biometrics from your face based off of blood flow. So just making it highly accessible to do a daily sort of reading, which gets sent to your doctor. But I think what gets me more excited, I love it when something really innovative actually ends up being low tech and hyper accessible. And there's a company in the Age Tech Collaborative called Zinnia that does therapeutic TV. And they worked with like a designer at Apple, and they create this beautiful content that is like scientifically dialed for folks with dementia to help them bring their blood pressure down. And it's actually gotten to the point where you can prescribe a show for somebody who's having an episode instead of giving them an antipsychotic. And they're doing this in the hospital. And so it seems simple, slow TV, but it's actually sort of beautifully innovative.
Just to add one thing there, I think amongst the trends we're seeing, I think the aging population and home health kind of go hand in hand. And I saw one radar that could detect if a patient had fallen in their home or perhaps hadn't gotten out of bed without it being a camera for privacy reasons. And I think as we look at the aging population and people being able to stay in their own homes to get the care that they need and home hospital growing at a rapid rate around the country, I think a lot of this technology might be put into place sooner than later.
Good, and we're really excited to see that here at the show. Now we've come up on time, so I just want to say thank you all for being up here with me, and thank you all for joining us in the audience, and I hope you have a wonderful rest of your week here at CES. Let's give it up for our media panelists. Thank you.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that roundtable from CES 2025. That's our show for now, but there's always more tech to talk about. Look out for other media roundtable conversations on policy and advanced mobility. And please help us give the algorithms what they want. If you're on YouTube, please subscribe and leave a comment. If you're listening on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iHeartMedia, wherever you get your podcasts, hit that follow button. You can get even more CES at ces.tech. That's ces.tech. Our show is produced by Nicole Vidovich and Paige Morris and edited by Third Spoon. I'm James Kotecki, talking tech on CES Tech Talk.